Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, on our two-year anniversary of our show.
A long, grueling 2 years. lots of food and wine consumed, and lots of stories consumed as well.
Yes.
So lots of consumption.
Lots of consumption.
We have the consumption.
We have consumed. We've met a lot of great people, ate a lot of good food, thanks to you, drank a lot of great wine, thanks to all those Texas wineries we have been working with.
Yeah, it was a fantastic year. Very, very bountiful.
Yes, and it's not over yet.
That's true.
It's not over. We've got a couple months, but we wanted to make the show today, our anniversary show, Chris. Really the whole reason we wanted to do this podcast, where we wanted this podcast to go, who we wanted to be able to use this as a platform, and that is the victims' families to be able to tell their story, to be able to share their loved ones' life, and really just to bring awareness to injustice.
Absolutely.
Because it happens. And sometimes we just don't have all the answers we want. And I think, especially in the case we're going to be talking about today, we are now back in Grayson County once again.
Once again.
John Palmer was already on our show speaking about his precious wife, Katie. Mm-hmm. And now we're here to talk about someone else that has lost their life in Grayson County. And maybe there is just too many questions. I've got a lot. I know I've got a lot. But we have Kimberly Mullins here today. Kimberly is here to talk about her sister and her sister, Amanda, and really just to bring awareness, one, to domestic violence, because that's a big issue in our country. And really what happened in Amanda's case, and just to tell her story. So Kimberly, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you guys for having me.
So I know these things are never easy, and I want you to, you're here to tell Amanda's story, and I'm really happy that you decided to tell it on our show, because we're all about spreading awareness, and we want Amanda's story told, because this happens in our country every single day. Mm-hmm. And we know what you have been through with some of the family members that have lost their lives to domestic violence. And if we can end our 2 years in any way, it's spreading awareness to know when to tell someone something, to for people to be able to speak up. Your sister told you lots of things that were going on in her life. And I'm really just glad that we get to learn more about Amanda today. And hopefully, I know her story and the story you're going to tell today is going to resonate with someone.
Well, I hope so. I hope it encourages women that how dangerous it is, that if you don't leave safely, there's a good chance that you're not going to leave at all.
Yeah.
You don't do it, you know, with help.
Yeah. We're going to go back to 2015. Let's start, first of all, before we get into this, tell us about Amanda. What was she like? What was going on in her life? Just anything you want to share with us.
Amanda was my baby sister. There were four of us. She was 12 years younger than me. So I've always had this thing just to take care of her, you know. Just, she was such a sweet and gentle soul. She was a hairdresser in Grayson County. She did hair. She was a mother of two, her sons Jordan and Kendall. And I don't know, she was just a really a kind person that always changed the atmosphere you know, she was always smiling and she always just lit up a room.
What was going on in her life in 2015? Let's talk about her situation and what ended up happening and really just what you and the family's thoughts were around the person she was dating. We're going to go ahead and say his name. His name was Brian. And we know he is actually no longer in the Grayson County area, and we'll talk about this. But can you give us an idea about what was happening around the time that this happened to your sister?
Yeah, so she, this is a good story about grooming. She was definitely groomed. She had met him. He was a gas station attendant, and it was a place that she stopped by frequently. But he just was very charming. She was married at the time, living in Grayson County, when she met this guy. And he was just very charming. He told her what she wanted to hear. Just, she was very vulnerable. And in some reason, she left the marriage for this guy, and it was immediately sucked into this terroristic relationship with him. And that was about 2012, 2013, somewhere in that time frame.
And then what happened? So did they end up moving in together immediately? Were they just in a full-on relationship? I mean, you said she left her marriage for this guy. I mean, what was the next 6 months like after that?
So she moved out. She got her own apartment with her boys. And she co-parented with Dustin. And it was just kind of a downhill spiral of... But she didn't like live with him until probably a year later.
Okay.
It was just kind of an on again, off again relationship, you know, after the divorce. She had, you know, our mom and sister were killed in 2009. So it seems like she just never really dealt with those deaths. And she carried a lot of that grief, unresolved grief. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, hard time. Yeah. You know?
I'm so sorry for your losses. I know you lost another sister and a mother from domestic violence, not in two situations, actually in one situation by the same person.
Yes.
So I'm very sorry, about that mm-hmm. and the fact that you had to relive this with Amanda's story. We know too well, all too well about grief. We've had multiple people on our show that have suffered loss, and we know what it can do and how hard it can be to recover mentally, physically, emotionally. Mm-hmm. So we totally understand where Amanda could have been coming from. And sometimes mm-hmm. we turn to things that aren't right. Sometimes we self-cope and self-medicate to forget about those things. And it's a part of life. And we have to talk mm-hmm. about them. She was depressed, right? Well, who wouldn't be mm-hmm. going through those things? I'm sure leaving her marriage was probably tough. And now she's in this relationship that ends up not being the best relationship for her. And then was she an alcoholic? Is that the way you would describe your sister? Or did you just think she would drink to self-medicate? I mean, because this is important to me, because the police kind of hone in on these things, which makes me so angry. But you know, how would you describe your sister in that state of mind then?
I believe she was definitely a daily beer drinker, and it was self-medicating. She drank a lot. Mm-hmm. I often think, her liver was taken for organ harvest. So I'm like, it was not disease. So I wrestle with that. But, you know, my father was an alcoholic, his father. So we come from a long line of, you know, addiction on both sides of the family. So I think that she self-medicated. But yeah, I guess I would say she was an alcoholic that, you know, treated her anxiety with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't do any other drugs. It was just beer was her choice.
All right. So let's fast forward. She's in this relationship. When did you or in the family or her start to notice issues with Brian?
Immediately. She actually was still very close to her ex-husband, Dustin. I mean, he still helped her out whenever she needed a ride, or I kind of had to step away from my relationship with her for about a year because I was trying to save her and still stay afloat, dealing with my grief. And so we kind of, 2013, we kind of took a break from each other. And that was for my healing. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of, being in touch with Dustin and still seeing the boys, you know, he was always concerned about her well-being. Let's see. So 2014, this is kind of whenever we really were scared for her. And this is kind of how we started getting Sherman Police Department involved and was asking them for help. So 2014, it was probably October, Dustin called and said, you know, Amanda is locked herself in the closet. Brian is brutally beating her and she needs help. And I can't leave. Is there anything you guys can do? Mm-hmm. So we left the dinner we were at and we were driving to her house and we called Sherman Police Department and we're like, hey, you know, my sister, there's reports that she's getting beat. We're heading over to get her. Can you send an officer out to help us? And dispatch was like, well, we can't respond if you're not witnessing it. And we're like, what? You know, we don't know what we're pulling up to. We know he's violent. We don't know if he has a gun or what's happening. And they refused to send an officer. So we showed up. She came out and I mean, she was bruised and I was like, come on, let's go. And it was kind of the first time that we'd really seen each other. And for at least 6 months to 8 months. And I said, are you tired? And she goes, I'm tired. And I said, let's go. And she goes, let me get my purse. And I was like, no, don't get your purse. We'll come back for it. And she goes, no, let me grab it. And she came out. He was standing over her neck the whole time, but she came out about 2 minutes later. She goes, you know what? We're just going to try to work it out. I'm going to stay. Well, I found out later that he said that he was going to kill me and Justin and our kids if she left that night. So she stayed out of fear that he was going to have us killed. So fast forward to November of 2014, my husband's at a CrossFit competition and we find out that a guy that's competing with us is a Sherman police officer. And his name is Sam Boyle, and you probably see his name in the reports stating he knew us. And we're like, hey, you know, this is the situation. The guy's got warrants. They wouldn't help us get her out. And he's like, hey, when she's ready to leave, call me. We'll have him picked up on his outstanding warrants. We'll get her out and get her safe. So he knew the situation. He knew how bad what she was living in with him. And he happened to be the responding officer at the door the night that Brian called and said that Amanda attempted to take her life in May of 2015.
Okay, so now we're in May. That Wednesday, May 13th, right?
Yes. May 14th is when they called 911, but May 13th is whenever all the, you know, you better be out or I'm going to kill you started happening.
Right. So we talk about this when there is a victim or there is an incident, what were they doing the day to 2 days before this? What was being said? What was their mental state? So I think this is important. I think that everything that you're going to talk about that happened on May 13th, the threats, the physical altercations, the words, because those matter, but people say matters. Mm-hmm. It's not just the physical abuse. And so let's talk about that before May 14th. What do you know about May 13th and what was said or told to Amanda from Brian?
So we found out from witnesses while she was still in the hospital that Amanda had been stashing money away. I had actually got her to give me power of attorney over her oldest son so I could get him some medical care and take care of his insurance. And that was April. And she said, you know, make me a promise that you're not going to take Jordan from me. And I said, I'm not. I said, but we've got to get him insurance. And so April, she started putting money back so she could get her own place. And she just, all she wanted to do was reunited with her boys. I mean, she was such a great mother. I mean, the best that she could do.
Yeah.
So fast forward. Okay. So Brian had found her money stash on that Wednesday night. And
did he know why she had the stash? Did she tell him?
I don't know. I don't think that, I mean, he coerced her so much that I don't think he knew why she had the money stashed away. Uh-huh. But it ended up in a physical altercation, and he told her that I'm going to choke and kill you if you are not out of the house by 7 o'clock the next day. And he said, when I get home from work, you better be gone.
Okay.
So according to Brian, they went to bed happy. Nothing was wrong. You know, mm-hmm. It was just a normal day on May the 14th that morning.
Yeah, I noticed he had a lot of good things to say. You know, yeah. He leaves all the, you know, all of these really important key things of him battering her and physically assaulting her out of all of his comments. All right, so now we're in May 14th. He says he goes to work in the morning, and Amanda does not go to work. Is that correct? She's in the house by herself. And I want to say they're living in a house with, maybe you can help me with this too. There's three rooms in this home, but they're all occupied by different people. Is that how it was set up?
It's a two-story house. And then the bottom is a kitchen and a living room. And the upstairs there's three bedrooms. So three different people upstairs. And then one person lives downstairs in a separate bedroom.
Okay.
Which is David, their neighbor. That's another witness to this.
Okay. So nobody is in the house that morning besides Amanda. Is that right? Everyone else is either at work or gone. So nobody really witnesses anything that morning. Everyone's leaving for work. Is that right?
Yeah. I never met anybody else except for David in the house. So, okay. But that morning, I only know that she didn't go to work because I talked to her boss, myself, and she didn't come to work that day, which was unusual for Amanda. She just didn't. She did no show, no call that morning.
Okay. I would, just based on the timeline and things that we're about to talk about, I guess my initial thought is maybe she's trying to get away while he's not there. That's... Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a good time to go is when they're not home. And it seems like that's kind of what she was planning. So she doesn't go to work. She walks to a gas station to borrow a phone, and she's calling a girl named Amber Brindley. And this is around 10 a.m. that morning. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She starts calling her ex-husband, Dustin, mm-hmm. and asking for Amber's number. She calls me and she calls my husband, but she, in all of that borrowing the phone, she found Amber's number.
Okay.
And started calling her that morning.
Okay. And why is she calling her? She's trying to get her to come pick her up. Is that right?
Yes. She was trying to get a hold of Amber to help her, to come get her that day. Her message to her was, I'm scared that he's going to choke and kill me. He's been choking me lately and I need to get out. And that was their texting back and forth.
Okay.
And so Amber told her to call her after 5 because she was at work. And then Amanda ended up talking to her at 5:15. She did call her back from a neighbor's phone.
Okay, so she goes over to a neighbor's house. This neighbor, Ada Thompson, is her name. She goes over there. She makes the phone call to Amber. Now, this phone call is heard by Ada Thompson.
Yes.
So tell us what Ada had to say about... Now, we know that Ada sees a bruise on Amanda's chest. And mm-hmm. she asks her about that bruise. And Amanda tells mm-hmm. her basically that Brian did it.
Yes. Okay. He told her that was her Mother's Day gift the Sunday before. So it was a fist-shaped bruise on her chest where he punched her in the chest.
Okay. What else did Ada Thompson witness on that phone call?
So she overheard Amanda telling Amber that she needed to be out by 7, that she was scared, that he was going to kill her, and that they were making arrangements for Amber to come, and that Amanda was supposed to call Amber back when Brian got home to use the phone because she didn't have a phone, and to come get her. And so Miss Ada had to leave, so she left, I guess, right after Amanda finished the phone call. But she was like, "Amanda, are you okay?" And she was like, "Yeah, I'm okay now. I'm good now." And this was like 2 hours before all this phone call started happening to 911.
So 2 hours later, around, I guess, 7:15, a 911 call comes in. Now, did Brian make that phone call, or is that David, who's also in that house? Who? It's made from David's phone, but who calls 911?
You know, I'm confused about it. I believe that David called. I tried to get the 911 call audio. And almost, it was a year later, but they said they don't keep those on file and it's already been deleted. So I never actually got to listen to the 911 call. If it was actually Brian who called or David. Okay. And there's a lot of confusion in the reports.
There's also confusion about time, which I have questions about. Okay. So let's back up a little bit. She makes the phone call from Ada's house. So the 911 call comes in from David's phone approximately 7:15, 2 hours after she makes the phone call to Amber from Ada's home. Mm-hmm. Now what we know on that 911 call is that whoever it is, Brian or David, said that that someone in the house had attempted suicide. I'm going to use that word because I think that's the word that is in the report. They use the word suicide attempt. But I have, this is where, you know, I look at these reports and I read them again and then I read them again. And let's talk about the time though, real quick. What time did Brian come home from work? Now that we have the reports and now that, you know, there's some discrepancy when it comes to the time, what do we know that he was doing when he came home? There was one report that him and David were having a beer and that they were hanging out. And then he went up into the room. And then there was another part where it said he came home and then went right up to the room. Mm-hmm. So was he home at 7 or was he home before 7?
So whenever the responding officers got there and they were initially questioning him at the scene, he said he got home at 6 o'clock. David, the neighbor, also said he got home at 6 o'clock and he'd only heard Brian come in. He never saw him and they did not have a beer together. I mean, that was all made up in Detective Jones' report. That was kind of fabricated afterwards. But each responding officer's report, he reported to them that he got home about 6 o'clock.
Okay.
And was with her that time. But he spent that whole time apparently looking for her, calling for her, noticing her bags were downstairs by the door. You know, he tells all the police that.
Yeah, and I do want to make a point to that. Her bags are packed. Mm-hmm. Two garbage bags full of clothes and a suitcase are all sitting at the front door.
Yes, the suitcase was down by the front door, her overnight bag with all of her personal items. And then upstairs next to the bed in the crime scene photos, you can see garbage bags full of clothes. We took those clothes and those were all her personal belongings in those bags.
So she's packed up and ready to go.
Yeah.
All right. So he gets home at 6. They don't live, I mean, they have the downstairs in the kitchen, but they only have one room to both of them. So,
right.
And just based on the description of this room and what was found, it doesn't seem like you would have to look very far to find someone. So he's basically saying he didn't see her for an hour and 15 minutes after he arrived.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, he said that he went into the closet, he changed his clothes. He didn't see her. And you look at the crime scene photos and there's nothing really hanging on the closet rod. Because all she had packed her things. So the closet rod's basically empty. Mm-hmm. And the clothes are laying across a hamper in the closet. So, I mean, he changed clothes, obviously. And that was partly true. Mm-hmm. But for him to say that, you know, he didn't see her knees or her legs sticking out between the clothes until his second attempt in the closet to find her.
Yeah, so... Yeah, just to make sure everyone's clear on that. He said he did come home. He looked around for her. He did initially look in the closet. He didn't see her in there. He didn't see her in the room. He didn't see her anywhere. And then it wasn't until he goes into the closet again for a second time is when he says he finds Amanda. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How was Amanda found? What were
According
the...
According to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
According to him, that she was sitting on her knees. He thought that she was actually sitting between the clothes and she was in a prayer position. She was on her knees as if she was praying. Mm-hmm. He took the cord and he broke it with his hands to get her down. And he later in the closet and was attempting CPR. So nobody else saw her hanging except for him.
Interesting. Broke the cord. Okay, let's talk about this cord. So just so everyone understands, your sister is found supposedly hanging in the closet by Brian. And he breaks the cord to get her down. This cord is not a rope. This cord actually came from an iron that was found at the crime scene that had been cut with the box cutter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a cord from an iron would be very long either.
And you know how I mean? Can you even break that with your own hands?
Well, you can't. It's wire. You have to cut it.
You have to cut it.
Well, unless
that's
like
exactly what my thought was.
Really strong. Not average strong.
Closet rod, I'm 5 feet, 1 inch tall, and I stood under it. I wish I would have measured the closet. I didn't even have the forethought to think about that, to reconstruct it. But I stood under the closet rod, and the cord was tied in 2 points on the closet rod. But it was only 5 to 5.5 feet long total. So, you know, they're claiming that she tied it in a U shape, you know, 2 different points, and then just twisted it around her neck and sat down and hung herself.
Okay. So now I'm envisioning that. Okay. Okay. So nobody saw. Okay. So he took her down. He says he takes her down. He says he takes her down. Does he try CPR?
He tells me that he does CPR. There's different reports that he beat on the floor and David heard him and came up, or he went down to David's room, asked him for help. I think he just needed a witness, you know. So David said she's dead. They went downstairs and called 911. But he did say that he did some CPR and she moved in his arms. She opened her eyes and he was assured that she was going to be okay whenever he was texting me.
But nobody actually witnesses any of this but him. Is that correct? David never sees her eyes open or her responding to any sort of touch or feel.
No. He goes, dude, she's dead. Let's get out of here. You know, that's what he told me. And I was like, you know, if CPR was in progress and responding officers came, then why are you downstairs at the door, opening the door for the police? And she's up there by herself.
Yeah.
That, like, it doesn't make
No, makes no sense. Okay, so the two responding officers are Sam Boyle, that you already mentioned earlier, and Nick Emmons. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What do they see or say when they arrive, just based on the report? And what kind of conversation were they having with Brian? Did they believe him? Did they take pictures of any whether that there might have been any kind of defensive wounds? Just to make sure that, I mean, this guy has a history of domestic violence. I mean, let's not even get me started on the fact that he had warrants out for his arrest and he was actually never even arrested, not even arrested to be questioned. So there's a lot of things missing on the side of law enforcement in this. But what do we know about what Brian told the officers?
So whenever they arrived, he pointed that she was upstairs, and then they went up there and found her and reported that she was still warm to the touch. Her lips were slightly blue. And I think at that point, EMS came in and started taking over the rescue efforts. And, you know, they asked, I guess there's so many officers on the scene and they all wrote reports, but, you know, they kind of asked Brian the questions, what time he got home, what happened. And that, of course, you know, he had went to work and came home and found her like that.
All right. What did David say? Did David just say he basically just heard Brian scream, oh my God, is that right? He hears him scream and then he comes out of his room.
And David's story to me is that he heard Brian screaming, oh my God. And then he's beating on his door and he says, Amanda, hung herself. I need your help. So that's when he took David upstairs.
Okay.
David's story is kind of all over the place, according to, you know, Detective Jones' report. But basically, you know, he told the other officers he got home at five. He heard Brian come home at six. And then Brian was beating on his door, asking for help before they called 911.
Did they take pictures of Brian or any, is there any documentation on defensive wounds? Was he ever questioned, like thoroughly questioned, especially when officers go and speak with Ada Thompson? And they're finding out all. And by the way, Officer Boyle, like you mentioned, had already been aware of his behavior. So was there any sort of action taken by the police to say and to figure out, you know, is this really what this is? Or is this a domestic violence, you know, or is there something more here that we need to question?
So, you know, my research on, you know, the procedures for Sherman PD, for any police department, or, you know, if anything looks suspicious, if there's any suspicion at all for domestic violence, you know, the person's arrested and questions are asked later. Knowing that Sam Boyle told every officer, I've been in contact with the family, I'm aware of the situation, let me contact them. So every officer there knew that he knew about the domestic violence history. So that warrant, I could pull it up and look what it was for. You know, anybody in public can.
Yeah, yeah. But you told me Brian ends up in her hospital room. So let's say, okay, so they get Amanda, they bring her down from the bedroom. They do attempt CPR. But she never regained consciousness. Is that correct? I mean, she was put on life support, but was considered brain dead. Is that right?
Yes. They got, you know, She still had heart electricity going on, so they got her heart going. But she already had anoxic brain death by the time all this happened. I mean, she never regained consciousness.
So arrive at the hospital, right?
Yes, we did. Because Sam Boyle actually called us and kind of told us what was going on. He said, I did call in the criminal department to investigate. Detective Jones is going to respond. Kind of reassured us that, you know, okay, we've got the proper investigation going on. Don't worry. It doesn't look good. He told us it doesn't look good. So y'all need to hurry and get here.
Okay.
But to this point, all I knew was Amanda was trying to get a hold of Amber that morning. Uh-huh. And she texted me and said, hey, just tell Jordan I'll call him later. I love you guys. And that's all I knew to this point. I had no idea that the argument had happened the day before. I had complete trust that law enforcement was doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I'm not a law enforcement officer, but if I find out that someone was threatened to be killed and that they were going to get away with it if they weren't gone by 7 o'clock, and then at 7:15 that 911 call is made, the fact that he was never brought in for this is just beyond me. And the fact that he had warrants. I mean, how does that even happen? And he ends up in her. So let's talk about this. He ends up in her hospital room, right? You say you come with your husband, you come to her room, and he's there with three other men. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what is that? What's that interaction like?
Well, we didn't like him anyway. You know, we asked that security escort him out. The nurse was kind of like, you know, she's got a big bruise on her chest. And he told us, you know, just now that it was from him doing CPR.
Wait a minute. Brian said that was from him giving CPR?
Yeah. Yes. He told the ICU nurse, because they questioned the bruise on her chest, you know, and he said that was from him doing CPR.
The one Ada Thompson saw 2 hours prior.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we had him escorted out. Detective Jones came and talked to us, asked us about her history. Okay. And, you know, we told her that she, of course, the domestic violence, but she did have a mental health history. You know, she did struggle with depression. Sure. I didn't doubt what they were telling me. I was trusting that, okay, you guys were calling her a suicide attempt. You know there's warrants, you know there's domestic violence. I'm trusting you guys are going to do your investigation.
Yeah.
So we go in to see her, and she's got a neck collar on, and you can't see her injuries at all. You know, she just looks like she's sleeping. And the doctors are saying that she's, you know, her brain, she's got a hypoxic brain injury. Doesn't look good. So we're 2 days sitting on this thinking, okay, police are doing their job. She tried to hang herself. I don't understand, but, you know, this will all work out. Well, they took her neck collar off on Saturday because they, I may be getting ahead of the story, but they said that her neck, she didn't have any neck fractures from the hanging attempt, which is kind of a protocol. And I was blown away at the bruising, the abrasions on her neck. That was the first time I was like, wait, I don't think this is what happened, you know.
Yeah.
2 days. I really was trusting this is what was going on, and they knew.
Did they take pictures of Amanda at the scene?
Not at the scene. Detective Jones took three photos of her in the emergency room. That was the only pictures of her taken. And there's absolutely no pictures of Brian taken, and there was no formal interview of Brian, just a scene statement.
So he's not arrested or even just talked to, really, just his general statement that he made when they arrived mm-hmm. on the scene. They take no mm-hmm. crime scene photo. They take some of the room.
Of the room, of the
okay.
Of the
phrase. Okay. But none specifically. You were the one who took the pictures of her body is before the autopsy actually takes place, and we'll talk about that. But that, so you take the pictures. You know, that was a very good thought, forward thinking of you to do that, by the way, because you probably didn't even know at the time there were no photos.
I didn't know. See? And, Saturday we took the neck collar off and I'm like, I need to talk to the detective. Like I need to get him on the phone. We need him up here because I'm questioning the whole story now. And we called him and left messages. We called 911. We called dispatch like, oh, he doesn't work the weekends. You'll have to get a hold of him Monday. And we're like, what the hell? No. I mean, we think that he's going to skip the country because he's an illegal immigrant and he's going to leave. And we did not hear from him until Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking pictures Saturday thinking if she dies during the weekend and we have no evidence, like how will we know?
Yeah.
I had no idea what done or not done.
Yeah. So no officer actually comes back up to the hospital. Is that correct?
They do not.
Okay. Amanda's blood alcohol was high, 0.382. Is that right?
Yes.
When I read that, my first thought was, how could she have even been able to physically do this to herself? Like I told you before we started this, this is a big question for me. That one that may have not have been answered quite yet. Somebody, one of the officers, proceeded to tell you that people could even drive at that level, which I do question that. Because as you mentioned, 0.4 is basically death. And I want to say in the photos that I saw that you sent me, it looks like the cord had been wrapped around 3 to 4 times.
Yes.
And someone of this alcohol level to get a box cutter and to think that the only cord they can use is the one on the ironing board. And then they have to cut. I don't even know sober if I would even be able to cut through the cord of an iron. I would basically just be sawing at it, I guess, until it came off. And then to be able to tie it twice, basically to one rod. And then this is just crazy. I mean, I'm thinking, was Amanda even conscious? Was she even awake? So I've got a lot of questions around this blood alcohol level and her ability to actually even do this to herself. Was that ever questioned, answered? Did that come up? Anything around that?
It's like it was just completely glossed over. Like, it just does not makes sense with a 5-foot cord that you can wrap it that many times and be sitting on your knees looking like you're praying. And yeah, just having the fine motor skills to cut an iron cord.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is that, you know, we were like, did you test, you know, fingerprints on the mm-hmm. box cutter? Like, whose fingerprints? Well, apparently there was not very good prints even to be tested. Detective Jones did that himself personally, and he didn't find any like usable fingerprints to say who touched it or whose handprints were on it. So, I mean, we had to ask for that to be done.
What about the iron? The handle of the iron? Did they test any of that?
Nope. Nope.
Oh, it just gets even more ridiculous. Okay. Yeah. All right. So Amanda is taken off life support and passes mm-hmm. away. But you mentioned two of Amanda's friends coming up, two females coming up to the hospital to see her. And then they decide to go and confront Brian at his home. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Amber, which is the one that he called for help, and then their friend Crystal.
So they go to Brian's. And are they going over there to confront him? Are they going over there to get some of her things? Are they going over there? What was their reason for going? And I know you said you had asked them not to. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't want to tip him off that we were even suspecting him, because at this point he was still, you know, texting me. You know, I was still trying to play devil's advocate. Even Saturday, I'm like, if the police are not going to question him, I need to get him here and get his statement. So I said, hey, do you want to come sit with Amanda for a little bit? You can be with her. You know, just trying to. And so I got him there and I put my phone on record and I recorded the his whole statement to me on what had happened. Because I didn't know if the police even questioned him at this point. I didn't. And I knew he was going to flee. I knew he would, you know,
which he did.
And which, he did. Mm-hmm. And he did. And so that Sunday, Crystal and Amber went by there. I mean, just to confront him. And, you know,
sure.
She said that they were pretty redneck about it, but then Miss Ada heard them yelling at him and asking, you know, they're asking about the bruise. And he goes, oh, she fell off the ladder when she was trying to put in a light bulb. And that's where she got the bruise from. So he's explaining the bruise away again, a different story. And as soon as they pull out and leave, he gets in his car. Miss Ada watches him get in his car. He's got an envelope in his hand and he drives away. And that's the last time he's seen in Grayson County by anybody.
So he ends up fleeing and he, because, well,
that was Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Sunday while she was on life support.
And did he ever contact you again? Try to text you, so, check on her? Was there any other correspondence from him?
So Monday, I kind of like texted him because Miss Ada came up and told me, you know, I saw him leave, but he hasn't came back yet. So I texted him like, hey, Amanda's doing better. You know, if you want to come see her, just trying to, you know, stay friends with him. And he said, that's great news. And then he disconnects his phone immediately. So after Monday, the 18th, the phone gets disconnected and there's no way to get a hold of him.
Did you ever go to the police after she passes away and to let them know that he has fled? Because at this point, you don't know what they've asked him, right? And you don't know what information they have. You've questioned him. You've taken your pictures. You've done your due diligence just to keep this, you know, in the forefront of your sister's case. So did you mm-hmm. ever, what did the police say? Did you tell them he fled? Did you ask them if they had spoken to him? Because now this is the third different story he's given about that bruise, right? So
yes.
What did they tell you?
So I kept a running email with Detective Jones because I couldn't get him to answer the phone. And so I kept asking him, can you pick him up on his warrants? Is there any way you could just question him? I don't think that, you know, she committed suicide. I think he did this. There was no response from him at all. I emailed him on Monday and said, Brian's disconnected his phone. He's like, thanks for letting me know. It was just very vague. Also, there's a question about the autopsy. You know, we wanted an autopsy done, and the justice of the peace said that they weren't going to do one because of her mental health history, and it was a suicide. And so we kind of had to fight all that battle too while she was still on life support.
So let me get this straight. There's not going to be an autopsy because someone has a history of mental illness. Is that correct?
Alcoholism.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Yep. I'll have to make a note of that because I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry you were treated that way and they never even had enough respect to call you back.
Yeah, the ICU doctor actually is the one that called the JP and said, hey, you know, the family has concerns. And he told them that there wouldn't be an autopsy. It would have to be at our cost. We can't, you know, we got a hold of the DA, Joe Brown, and they approved it. So thankfully she didn't pass away before we got all that approved.
So the autopsy is done. Thankfully.
It did get done.
Okay.
Yes.
What did the autopsy show? What did the report say? I know you had correspondence with the person who actually completed, the medical examiner completed the autopsy. So tell us about that.
So we met with Detective Jones on Tuesday the 19th. And that's when they told us, you know, Amanda was still on life support on that Tuesday the 19th. Of course, they told us families don't accept suicide. You know, this is not TVCSI. And this was Officer Smith. And I guess at that point, you know, Jones said, you know, I said, I want an autopsy. He goes, okay. He goes, we'll let this, we'll talk about this after the autopsy. You know, it's kind of like, okay, we all had kind of relief. Mm-hmm. Well, we sent her for autopsy on that Thursday. They took her off life support, or Wednesday night. Thursday, they did the autopsy. Mm-hmm. And then Friday morning, we got the final report saying it was suicide by hanging. So it was like 24-hour turnaround, and they had determined all their investigation and the outcome within 24 hours.
Okay. And I want to make sure I have this correct. Dr. Jill Urban, okay. Doctor, because I mean, I'm a little astonished. I'm sorry. I'm all of this is astonishing, but the whole, I want to make sure I have this clear. They okay. put on the death certificate that it was a suicide. And the reason they gave you is because there were no defensive wounds. That's it.
She said, I go, after we got the autopsy, the funeral home said we have her back. And the autopsy says suicide by hanging. And so we got permission from Atherton to talk to the medical examiner. And, you know, I was like, how did you rule that? What's the difference between strangulation and hanging? She had no idea. Amanda's body came to her as female possible suicide by hanging. That is the only thing that she had to do her autopsy with. There was no history, no forensic collected at the scene. The ligature wasn't, she didn't anything about the ligature. So she pretty much did the autopsy from the view of suicide by hanging. So we call her and we talk to Dr. Urban on the Friday around noon. And she said, well, her hyoid bone wasn't broken and there was no defensive wounds, like she was fighting back. And so I explained all the situation and what was going on. And I sent her what I had, my pictures I had taken of her. And I don't know. Then her and Jones talked after that. And then she stood by her ruling.
Did anyone ever reenact with this, the length of the cord and wrap it around the times that is clearly seen on Amanda's neck? Did anybody ever go and actually try to reenact that and tie it around to see if it would actually work in that manner?
So, did you ever see the recreation that Sherman PD did?
Yes. So did they do that with finding out if, so I guess my question is, when I look at those pictures and I see the amount of times it's wrapped around, I have question about that. Her blood alcohol level. I mean, I go back to that. Was she even capable and able to understand wrap, you know, I guess mm-hmm. if they say she hung it one side and then she hangs it to the other, and then she basically puts her head through it and ties it around mm-hmm. and just basically hangs there, right? If she's found on her knees, like he says, then she doesn't necessarily hang. She just sort of drops down until her breathing is cut off and she becomes unconscious.
Right.
So did they
fall out of mm-hmm. like that? I mean, if you're unconscious, you're going to fall out of it.
Right.
You don't need to
and defensive wounds to me is if someone is actually conscious and actually, first of all, in front of you, because if I'm behind someone with a cord and I'm trying to, you know, to grab at you, but again, I go back to her blood alcohol level. I mean, mm-hmm. we don't even know if she was conscious. I mean, we really don't know anything except it since the time she left Ada's house.
Right.
And so I just have so many questions about this. All right. So how did this correspondence go with Dr. Jill Urban? Did you ask for a reevaluation of the autopsy? I know you asked if she could meet you in person. How did that go? Was she in touch with the police in regard to, you know, knowing that she was in a domestic violence relationship? Was there any kind of thought put back into maybe this isn't what it looks like?
So when we talked to her at noon on Friday, she had not spoke to anyone from Sherman PD at all. She had just did it based on the report that came with her body. Now, Detective Jones put in his report that he spoke to Dr. Urban extensively prior to autopsy, which is complete perjury.
So he lied in his report.
Yeah, he lied. Yeah, yeah. He lied about so much in that report. I mean, he gave Brian an alibi that he was drinking with friends, you know, after work. Anyway, yeah, that's just a whole different, I mean, it's a big, bold statement, but I mean, he committed perjury in his report to get his outcome. But my efforts with Dr. Urban, hopefully I was sending her, I didn't have any crime scene photos because I had no idea what the ligature even looked like. I didn't know how long it was until September when we got the open records report. But she apparently talked to Sherman Police Department after our concerns. She took all her photos into consideration. And after evaluating Sherman PD, it was definitely suicide by hanging. I don't know because she was back. I don't know why. She's been contacted by other officials at Grayson County. We've taken it to different officials and they've contacted her and they all still stand by the autopsy. I mean, they hang their whole thing on the autopsy.
So what was the reason they said your sister took her life? Because Brian was about to? Because that's what he told her he was going to do at 7 o'clock, after 7 o'clock. So what was the depression? She was an alcoholic. Because Ada Thompson had just seen her 2 hours prior to this. And your sister had mm-hmm. bags packed. So people who typically yes. are packing their bags, ready to go. She's making multiple phone calls through the day to be picked up. That doesn't typically show signs of someone who is going to end their life. It looks like they're trying to begin a new life. So
right, they're scared to death.
Yeah. So, anything after your sister's autopsy is done, he flees. Right, a few days. Yes. You know he's gone. The police now know he's gone. You told him that he turned off his phone. Now your family or you started working with a private investigator. Is that correct?
Yes, in 2018, I paid a private company to step in on our behalf.
Okay.
And you know, you pay people, and they don't. The Sherman Police Department do not care. You know, it's kind of they kind of scoffed at it. Like, and you know, just because some people have this opinion doesn't mean it's going to change our opinion. But we'd already gone through, you know, the DA's office, the sheriff's department, went through the assistant chief of police, which Stephen Dean actually said she took her life because she was so desperate that she was going to be killed. And it was out of desperation and we were misinformed family. But Flores, we met with Chief Flores in 2017 and he said that the problem is that your sister had a history of mental illness. That's the problem. And that's the part they can't get past.
Yeah.
And that's their basis. That is their only basis. It's her history of mental illness.
I'm so sorry for that. I really am. I mean, if they did that with everyone in this world, then they would investigate anything. So, I mean, I don't, since when does that become a basis of if there is any kind of mental history, then they're just going to assume it is what it is because they're out of touch with reality. I mean, you're just talk about making assumptions and just assuming.
I mean, nothing proper investigation was followed. I mean, it was nothing was applied that's laws in place or policies or procedures that was not followed. And I don't know if it's because Jones is just a biased asshole that
I mean, I read his report and you know what I noticed? That he was saying that Brian would say that she would act erratically when she would drink, and that Brian said that he would have to calm her down, and that Brian said that she would get out of hand. I could clearly see it in his writing. It doesn't take mm-hmm. much to read that and say he clearly is taking his side. He clearly agrees with him. Because this is coming from Brian, we should all believe it and put it in the report. And this is what your sister was actually dealing with. And it's so incredibly frustrating. And I'm sorry to your family. I'm sorry to Katie Palmer's family. I'm sorry, really, to the other five families that reached out to me from Grayson County dealing with this. Mm-hmm. But this is the kind of thing that gives police officers and authorities a bad name for the disrespect of not even allowing them to make the effort to go to the hospital to look at your sister's wounds on her neck, knowing that there was a history of domestic violence. I mean, how more awful and shitty can we get? And mm-hmm. it wasn't even the right thing to do. Forget protocol. They're not even doing the right thing. And to tell you this isn't CSI, I mean, how disrespectful. Mm-hmm. I mean, how dare they speak? I mean, it's just incredible that some of the things that are coming out of their mouths. And why? Why? Because she had a history of mental illness and she had a drinking problem. And I noticed he put that in his report too multiple times. Beer cans everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's beer cans everywhere. There's, you know, clearly she, you mm-hmm. know, clearly she was probably basically what he was saying is she was probably just drinking and drunk and then had enough, like the police officer told you. I like how they tell you, right? Knowing that they've never even spoken to your sister because now she's gone and she was trying to get away. She's trying to get away that day. She has her bags packed. Miss Ada sees her. She has bruises on her. She tells Ada, do people think she just made that up? Are we just going to make up how we have bruises? Nope. Brian made it up because he gave three different stories of how that bruise got there. I mean, this is just so beyond. And you get pushback. You're getting pushback from people, a DA, you're getting pushback from police chiefs. You're every person you're talking to is saying, you know what? We just can't get past the fact that your sister had a history of mental illness. Well, you know what? When do you stop and say, you know what? When does someone, one person say, you know what? This is not right. This is weird. He was going to kill her. He told her, if you're not out by 7, I'm going to choke you and kill you and get away with it. And what has he done? He's now in Guatemala. He has now fled Grayson County. He's now in Guatemala. Your PI found him in Guatemala through social media. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And now you sit here and with me and Chris and tell this story and we're getting no action. We have to have action. This is gone too far, too much. And these are the types of things that why just follow protocol, just do the right thing, arrest him for warrants. He has warrants. Isn't that enough? Like, just forget what happened to Amanda for 5 minutes. The man has warrants and he's in their county. Yep. Why not make the arrest? I mean, these are the things that are just eating at me with this. And it's frustrating because all you want is someone to say, you're right. You're right. This looks weird. He has a history. He has assault on his record. Like there is a history and a pattern. What about his history and pattern? They keep bringing up Amanda's. What about his?
Yeah. And you know, if you reading like Detective Jones' report alone, there are 44 mentions of domestic violence and threats against her and what people came through witnesses. On his 11-page report, there are 44 mentions of different domestic violence.
Yet everyone's lying or making it up.
Yeah.
And your sister had mental illness. And so that's, we don't care about people who have mental illness. I mean, that's basically what they're saying, that people who have mental illness don't make good decisions or they make rash decisions. I mean, it's just totally incompetent. It's totally incompetent is what it is.
You get your murder rate down and it makes you look good in the end. But I think that we just went head to head and he's like, you're not going to tell me how to do my job. It's what I felt like, you know? So I've had to let go of what I understood the justice system to be, you know, and that it's not inherently good. And that's so sad.
It is sad. And I am so sorry you were treated in this manner. And and just see what you have had to deal with and really just begging someone to take a look at this. And now he's gone. He's out of the country. Now, let me tell you something, girl. It ain't over yet, though. It ain't over. And don't let that bother you that he's somewhere else, because I have done some research and he can be extradited back here. And so I want you to keep your head up with this. And I told you before we got on here that I've gone through these reports. I've read this timeline over and over. I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe if somebody threatens my life 24 hours before it's gone, that it's just a coincidence that I decided to take it instead of him. And I also know that women don't pack bags and go upstairs and hang themselves. She wanted out. She had made multiple phone calls to get out. And I think this needs another look. I hope whatever we can do to at least bring some awareness to this, and whether it's going back and talking to witnesses, whether it's going back and trying to figure out timelines. But the thing is he lied. He lied. He made it sound like the relationship was perfect. It wasn't. There was, like you said, 44 different statements of witnesses to, you know, she told you, she told Amber, she told friends. I mean, she didn't make this stuff up. She didn't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
All right. And then, so we're here now. We're here in 2022. What is happening now? What has happened really over the last year? Where are we now with this? I know the case is considered closed because once it's considered a suicide, they do close the case. Are they waiting? Have you asked them to reopen it? Do they want new evidence? Where does all that stand?
So contacting the Sherman, they have been so gracious to relook at her case over and over. We had that when the private investigator tried to contact them, well, they set up an officer to meet with my investigator. Well, that officer was one of the responding officers to the scene with Officer Boyle. So they said Nick Emmons would be an unbiased person to relook at the evidence. And I was like, no, he was on the scene. He has a vested interest in this case. I don't want him. So I shut down the private investigator. We went away from that because that's who they wanted to meet with. So Nick Emmons reached out to me after that. He graciously reconstructed the scene with a 10-foot cord. I'm like, it's not even the same length of cord. So that's pretty
much. You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not. I was like, I asked to see the cord. They said that's not policy. I'm like, I know the cord was not that long. It was not that long. So yeah, they recreated the scene in 2020. I'm trying to remember, or 2018. So that's it. I just think about it every day. I write about it.
So they recreated the scene and basically just told you it was a suicide, right? Yeah. Nothing really came of that at all. Okay. Yeah.
And then they hung, you know, they set her twist around her neck, you know, a dummy and did that. And then they hung 140 pounds of weights on that cord. And the officer went over there and broke it with his hands. He goes, so you can break a cord with your hands. And I'm like, there wasn't 140 pounds hanging from that cord. She was leaning in it. It's not even the same.
No, it's not. It is absolutely not even the same. It's not even called the same thing. I mean, Chris, correct me. It's called, no, because I had someone who I was very close to was found in that manner that they said she could have just stood up. basically.
Yes.
They lean over, but it's I think it's called like an incomplete hanging. There's an actual word that describes that manner.
Well, you can hang yourself without being suspended. I mean, but you right. just have to have the tension obviously going in the opposite direction.
Right. You lean forward into yeah. the into it till it basically cuts off your breathing. So they yeah. you know,
but it caused downward marks, you know, backwards. Yep. You know, I wish that I had taken pictures of her back because our investigators said, you know, she probably had a bruise in the middle of her back from as much bruising as she had on her strap muscles and the abrasions around her neck, that he probably was behind her with the knee. And we had her cremated and donated all the organs and skin. So we didn't have any way to go back and look. It was kind of too late, but it makes sense now, you know, how that deep bruising on the lower part of her neck was how it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I also have a big problem with the fact of how many lines I see on her neck, because I don't think she could have wrapped herself that many times around and been able to get in that position. It just doesn't make any sense to me. That looks like somebody took it and right wrapped it around and then pulled. That's what it looks like to yeah. me.
Yeah. So it makes sense in my head, family and friends, but it's just getting past that blue wall of anybody just saying, hey, let's do the right thing here. There's no accountability. There's no integrity. I've just kind of lost faith in Grayson County and Texas anymore. I mean, got a Texas Ranger looking at it and telling me there's nothing that indicates homicide. I'm like,
besides the fact he threatened to kill her.
Yeah. I mean, it was Ranger Oliver. Him and the DA looked at it and was like, no, there's nothing here indicates homicide. It's like, anyway, I don't know. I don't know where to go. I don't know what needs to change. She's not the only one in this country. And there's so many of the same staged crime scenes. And
yep.
And our women are just still being killed. Crazy.
Well, and I go back to the fact that he claims he couldn't find her for an hour and 15 minutes.
And she was still pink and warm.
Yeah, yeah, pink and warm, and the fact that they live in one bedroom. And that he already entered the closet once and saw nothing, and then comes back to the closet and changes clothes. And I'm sorry, but someone like that who had a history of domestic violence, who had already made threats to her, I actually think that he was waiting to get home to see if she was still there. I think he was probably thinking, we'll see if she's there and we'll see what happens.
And I think they were together that hour. I mean, they were together from 6 to 7, and I believe that they probably argued, drank. Yep. I think he said, okay, bitch, it's 7 o'clock. I told you, you know, that's what I think in my head happened. And like, I told you, and I'm going to do it.
Yep.
But he choked her all the time. I mean, that was his method of control, was choking, and it scared her. She goes, I would go out and I was so scared I wasn't going to come back. And she told friends that all
the
time.
Sorry.
So, And girl, I know. I appreciate you guys telling her story, and maybe somebody will just step up and do the right thing. But I'm very disappointed, you know, and the friend that we had asked to help, and he was there, and I was like, God put you there for a reason. And apparently it was to expose integrity, and I don't know.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at these photos together, and we're going to just take a step back and take the emotional part out of this. And we're going to look at these pictures. We're going to look at these witness statements. We're going to do whatever we can. And then whoever we need to present this to, we're going to present it to. I don't know who that is. I don't know the way that we have to go about this, but I don't want you I just don't want you to give up, because I think this is highly suspicious. I think that the fact that you know, on one end, we have protocol that wasn't followed, right? We have someone who had warrants out that wasn't arrested. We have someone that was known to have a violent violence with your sister. And then on the other end, we have someone who gave inconsistent statements and lied. And that, and by the way, he flees. So, and leaves everything behind and doesn't take anything with him. So these are big red flags. These are big red flags, and I'm not even law enforcement. So, I don't know why they couldn't just get past the mental illness thing. That would be a question that I might have for a police officer friend that I would like to ask that question to you. And a couple of other questions that I have with as far as the investigation goes, but I don't want you to give up because as you know, cases can be solved 20, 30, 40 years down the road. Brian can always be found in this world. So I don't want you to give up. And you know, whatever we can do to help, this is a start. You're telling her story. We're getting it out there. But you and I will do some stuff together and really just do what we can. So I'm sorry, that you are having to deal with this. I'm sorry they completely dismissed everything you asked them to do. I'm sorry. And, I know they did a little bit of it, but it really was just, sorry, your sister had mental illness and she was an alcoholic. And as though like, that's what they do. They just hang themselves, you know, even though she packed bags and was ready to leave and had made multiple phone calls that day. And the bruise was already there based on Ada Thompson's witness statement to the police. I don't even know how that just enough isn't enough just to bring him in, question him, but it didn't happen. And he was able to leave this country. So I'm sorry, but don't give up. And we're here to help. So please keep in touch. Let's get, you know, now your sister knows the story. And people out there listening, you know, we know it's not easy to leave. I do a lot of things with different nonprofits that are in Dallas that help women and men get out of situations that are not healthy. And we know it's dangerous. We know that when people leave or attempt to leave is when things happen like this. But we don't know what happened with your sister and the conversations that took place. We only have Brian's statement, and that's a problem. So don't give up, Kimberly. We're here to help. All right, friends. Well, thank you for listening today. And, we will be, keeping any updates, for you, but we appreciate Kimberly being here. Until next time, friends, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.
Cheers to everybody. Thank you.